The advantage of talking late is that everything you ever want to talk about is already covered by Simon White and Volker Springle. So alpha, I'm just going to focus on very narrowly on one specific topic and trying to understand what's the feedback effect on the IGM, and in particular a high light shift in Riemann alpha clouds. My outline is fairly boring FJ ladder style outline. I'll just give you the motivations and our means to study this effect and the result, and hopefully the conclusion that's possibly taken home. There are lots of motivations. First of all, galactic superwings are observed directly, both locally in starburst galaxies and at a high light shift in the Lambert-Bray galaxies. The typical speed of outflowing gas is a few hundred kilometers per second. And the IGM, as we know, is observed to be enriched by metals to varying levels. In the Riemann alpha clouds at high light shift, you have seen the metallicity about 10 to minus 3 or so, for columns above 10 to 14 and a half back a decade ago. And now there are better observations. Actually, now you can probing even lower column density clouds. At lower light shift, in the warm, hot intergalactic medium, we have seen metal lines, oxygen 6, oxygen 7, oxygen 8 lines. So apparently they're also being enriched by metals to typically a level about 0.1 solar metallicity. And then this old problem that if you don't put feedback in, then almost all the barons will collapse to form stars, whereas we know that about only 10 to 15% of all barons collapse to stars by today. So presumably the feedback law might play a role here. And the opposite side of this is that if you don't form stars, just let barons follow dark matter, what you end up is that the gas gets so clumpy but hot enough so it overproduces the soft X-ray background. So there must be something, some parameter, which can characterize the feedback effect such that you do it right, somewhere in between. Then there are other effects. Navarro Stamets have shown that photoionization is not effective, so what's left, possibly feedback effect, might delay the creation of gas such that you exert more torques, therefore larger disks. Possibly related is the X-ray cluster scaling properties from simulations that does not include non-gravitational heating or cooling processes predict that luminosity of X-ray cluster is proportional to the temperature squared, whereas observed relation is luminosity is to the temperature to the further power. And it's a long time ago that Kaiser's pointed out that preheating might be needed to explain both the evolution and now the scaling properties in the local X-ray clusters. And possibly need a combination of both cooling to remove the low entropy gas and heating to further raise the entropy of the gas. That's a nice paper by Mike Voigt. And there are lots of papers, it's impossible to list. So we have the standard cosmological model, which has six parameters. None of them look like rational numbers. So it's not the most beautiful model you want to have. Nevertheless, this model fits a lot of things we observe in the local universe. If it's the larger scale structure, clustering properties, and among other things. And of course, from these parameters are mostly determined by the microwave experiment, WMAP. And here is ionization. Can I resist that? But I'm not going to talk about ionization today. I will only say that I think double ionization is plausible, probably likely. And I will probably bet my farm, if I have one, on it, was a hedging. Okay, I don't have beautiful pictures like Volker Springle had, but this is a genetic picture. Basically, you have things forming, you know, sheets, then forming, collapsing the filaments, and a drain around the filaments. One point I do want to mention is that all the things that end up in this cluster, or a galaxy, whatever you call it, genetic, they come from different regions. So the ending point may be the same, but the different, they come from different paths, different histories. So we start with a standard model that specifies the initial condition, and we're adding the standard physics, gravity, hydrodynamics, galaxy formation, and a bunch of atomic physics processes, then the feedback from star formation. Now, everybody includes this. In particular, we also include metal cooling, which may or may not be important depending on what kind of objects you're looking at. For things which correspond to a few hundred kilometers per second, the metal cooling is extremely important because the difference between with and without metal, the cooling time differs by a factor of 100. So it's important for some than other processes. How do we model the galactic superwings? Basically, we have no knowledge how the wings actually generated, except to say that we know what might power these wings. And it's commonly accepted that that collectively stellar wings and supernova explosions may be powering the galactic superwings as we observe them, flowing out a few hundred kilometers per second, both in optical clumps, in X-rays, possibly. So at the outset, what we do is we accept our inability to model the generation of galactic superwings. Rather, we just say, okay, we might be able to understand what effect that GSW might cause on the IGM and the subsequent galaxy formation. And we adopt the simplest possible model by just using one single parameter, that is E, supergalactic wing, which is the energy gets released into this wing for m star amount of stars formed times speed of light squared. Associated with this, you see how much metals is produced, this is the yield factor. We can choose a reasonable number just by reading Arnett's book. You say, okay, yield is 0.02, put it in. And so this is the only parameter we adjust in our entire computation, besides adopting the standard model. That this number, now the y, is actually fairly well constrained. That is, we have one number put in, and then the outcome will just linearly to the first order proportional to that y. And we have looked at the evolution of the damped Lyman alpha systems over a redshift range from 1 to 4 or so, that the symbols here, observations, and the lines from simulations, this redshift, and this is the metallicity in solar units. As you can see, they fit reasonably well, and the slow evolution of damped system metallicity seems to be borne out naturally from our simulations. Then at the hotter end, over density by 1,000, these are in the clusters, and the lines here, the solid line, redshift 0, just to show you how narrow it's concentrated at about a third of solar. And these symbols, just it's placed arbitrarily in vertical direction, but here, the horizontal direction, about a third of solar. Okay? So one parameter y, we were able to reproduce different observations. So then it will be a test, say, how this might affect the metallicity distribution in lower density regions, for example, in the Lyman alpha clouds. So that's the focus of the talk. Now, this is just to correct a mild misperception people had. We have been doing simulations feedback since 1992. Okay, and I often read papers say, okay, this is the first time we included blah, 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 blah. So this is just to say, now, I'm not saying we have been doing this perfectly, but we have been improving over the years. So we have spent quite a bit of time to do a set of simulations to understand different effects. Here, we have the fiducial model. The first line has box size 11 H inverse megaparsec, spatial resolution 25 kpc, and this mass resolution. And this is sort of, this is important, I will talk a bit more on this, is the actual interparticle separation when you lay down your initial condition. That's important because if you don't have the power to start with, there's no way you can generate any galaxies subsequently, no matter how high resolution you get, no matter how many levels you refine, it basically is useless. You're getting basically wrong results, maybe producing beautiful pictures, but results basically wrong. And then we by varying the feedback effect, and this number will roughly correspond to that, you get the wings a few hundred kilometers per second. And then we shut off the feedback. And then we raise it by a factor of 5 in energy just to see what's the effect. And this one doubles the spatial resolution and mass resolution by a factor of 8. And this one increased box size just to see the size effect on the results. And these two, just by suppressing artificially the small scale power in simulation by lowering the Nyquist frequency. So this is by a factor of 4, and there's another factor of 4, just to see what kind of things might affect what. And in our larger simulations, and the fourth and the fifth, we have nearly abelian fluid elements. Remember, it's a uniform mesh, so you have exact same resolution in Lyman alpha clouds as in high-dense regions, which has the disadvantage that you cannot resolve very well for very dense systems. You know, like places you see you're forming stars, you cannot resolve spiral structure, this kind of thing. But for Lyman alpha clouds, it's an advantage because you have resolution all over the across the board, regardless of the density. So I'll just go back and review a bit what the standard paradigm for Lyman alpha forest. It's a.
There's significance to the word Satan.
Yeah, I finished the talk this morning 4 o'clock, so you have to forgive me. Okay, I couldn't sleep anyways. Eastern time 7 o'clock, so I got up. So this basically, if you shoot rays through this box, you're going to produce things like this. That's observed by Keck. Okay, and now you can look at different things, column density and width distribution and so on. You get good agreement in cosmological standards. So now we have a standard picture, that standard model plus gravitational instability plus hydrodynamics can successfully produce the Lyman alpha clouds. And this, not just our work and all the people done equally important work and basically got same results. Now, the question is, do galactic superwings spoil the agreement that we have found between simulations that those mostly do not have feedback and observations? The answer is no. And here, the left is with and the right without galactic wings. This is neutral hydrogen density projected on our wing face, 11 megaparsec box, 11 megaparsec deep. Basically, to your eyes, sitting back there, probably you cannot see anything. I can see some difference when I look at very closely at the monitor. But to the extent, there's not much difference there. And this is nice work by Tunes et al. If you compare these two panels, not much difference. Gross features. To be a bit more quantitative, and we generate artificial spectra from the simulation and then look at the flux distribution for all these runs. They do not differ much. And this is the width distribution with and without feedback, solid and dashed histogram. they peaked around the same place, and the width is comparable. And this is the column density distribution. Again, the two symbols, they look more or less the same here. Not same, but this line and this open triangle, which are with and without feedback, and versus the observed. This here is known that the model seemed to, from everybody's study, seemed to underpredict the Lyman limit system, but that's a separate question. But basically, if you compare these two runs, you get same results. Okay. But as we know, the feedback do have some effects. So the question is where you might look for these. And this is just to show the metal bubbles. As you can see that without galactic wings, but with all the other processes included, including gravitational interaction, whether it's merger or harassment, whatever that is, it's included in both. And so this simulation, just in addition to everything else, has the wings. As you can see, now these fairly large bubbles, and at a distance of a few hundred kpc to maybe a megaparsec or so, filled with gas, with a metallicity about 10 to minus 4, so divided by solar. So in solar units, about 10 to minus 2, that's about the metallicity at the boundaries of these bubbles. And the filling factor, possibly a few percent or so, just by looking at, I didn't compute it, but looking at this this figure directly. This projection, yeah, it's much larger, of course. Projection maybe is 20%, looks like. Okay. Then we computed the metallicity in solar units as a function of the column density of neutral hydrogen with and without galactic wings. No, sorry, let's see. I messed. No, but I can just tell you the truth. Okay. So this is with the wings, and without wings, going to just go down. There's no turn up. Okay. So then we say, oh, this is good. So this will be signature that the wings actually blowing to the voids where the density is low and where the resistance is very low. So the wings will just sort of go there unimpeded. The lines is 50%, 75%, 25%, and 5%, 95%. These are percentiles. So 50% of the clouds at 10 to 15 will have metallicity above 2.5, minus 2.5, and so on. Okay? So we received a reference report positive, so almost published. Then I found an error in my interpretation. The difference is these lines will just go down. There's no back turn.
So you're saying that you don't need the wings to get the high column density systems?
You need the wings to get there, to get the metals.
10 to the 15, you're saying that
no, no, no. Actually, they overproduce too much. You need the wings to spread a bit more. Okay. But this paper was posted on the web, but it's wrong results. I found the error voluntarily. Okay, so the paper will be unpublished, but I was glad I found error. The thing is that these clouds, when I look at direct in 3D, just look at what is over density of these clouds. With and without, they both turn down. It doesn't go up. These are just a few very, as you can see, the lines got squeezed together. That means they only a few clouds there. So. Ignore that for the moment. Basically, the wings has mild effect of pushing these lines to the left. But basically, all the lines get stopped at the mean density. Just the metallicity doesn't go far beyond the mean density. So how do you reconcile this one and the previous slide? Turns out, it's the temperature. These things which are producing low column neutral hydrogen clouds are actually in dense regions which heat up. Okay, so they have a higher temperature, that gets counterbalanced by the high density. So you get some kind of upturn, which of course they, in the high density region, so they have significant more metallicity. And where in this case, of course, there's no heating here. So the paper, if you, I guess nobody reads the paper anyway. So if you already read it.
50% contour, if you go back to that last plot, the 50% contour wasn't so different, right? The solid line in the middle, not that one, the last one. It's the temperature curve. So the 50% curves are similar.
Yeah.
Both sides.
Yeah, but there's a significant small percentage of things which get heat up.
And you're saying in your simulation, most of the low density, low confidence systems are all in really in high density regions.
No. That's not true. That's not true. Because it may be. Yeah, for example, here, you cannot tell how many clouds are there in Yale. For example, here, the number of clouds could be 1,000. Here, the number of the clouds could be 10. I'm just, for that particular bin, if you just stretch out, that's a percentage distribution.
You're saying your simulation, 10 to 12 common things are very rare, and the few rare ones are like your galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, no, the mostly is not. The 50%, as you can see, is not affected with or without wind. So these are not high temperature regions. These are normal regions.
Yeah, when you go back to the metallicity one, you had the metallicity shooting up at these
clouds. What's the normal temperature of clouds that make quite a bit of sensitivity in the forest? Because it first shows that the forest have a change, so the instant most of the volume is not affected, and most of the volume is affected in 12 lines. How can they all be hot?
Most of them are. I think that's why.
Yeah. Well, this some point out, this projection. So the whole filling factor actually is probably 1%. And if you look at the very first time the neutral hydrogen, nothing changed.
So how do you identify a comet? Is it just a projection, or you actually identify
one? No, identifying in your space in 3D. I mean velocity space.
In
spectrum. Okay. So, what if you tune up the strength of the galactic superwinds? Not much different. This is the fiducial number, and this is the one with a factor 5 higher eject energy. And you see, if you look at the 50% line, it's being pushed straight, or a little bit to the left, but nothing dramatic. Still stopped at redshift, at the overdensity 0. I measure from the, depends on which figure you're asking. So for this one, I just go to the, first I generate a spectrum. Then I weight it, each pixel in velocity space by the actual overdensity in 3D. Then ask what is the actual weighted 3D overdensity. So that's the overdensity I got. On metallicity, metals actually follow as a separate species, just like hydrogen and helium as a different density species. So
for that low column density stuff that was so hot, your spectra were nevertheless able to get a hydrogen column density equivalent despite the large line widths and the low column, the low abundance of neutral hydrogen?
Yeah.
Even at 10 to 6 degrees?
It's not 10 to 6. Here's temperature. Here's temperature. So at the edge, it's 10 to 5. So now I cannot tell you whether these low column density clouds correspond to this point or this point. It's hard to tell at the moment. But just believe me, I'm telling you the truth. Okay. So Paul just mentioned, if you look at oxygen 6 line, which has a peak abundance about 3 times 10 to 5 Kelvin, then you might expect that it show up in the emission of this line. Indeed, if you look at the difference between this one and this one, it's quite significant here, with this cross-section here, probably tripled, and so on. Okay, so carbon lines may not be the optimal choice for this particular phase. Maybe oxygen line is a better choice. We have to see more quantitatively. Now, if you ask question, so I've plotted the mean and the percentile figures. Now just the medium. Now just ask, what is the mean metallicity? You get quite surprising results. That is, without wing, everything stay in the high-dense region. But with wing, you occasionally have very high metallicity, sort of the bullets shooting out. And they don't get dispersed enough. So they don't show up in the percentile plot. They have a very small filling factor. But they contain quite significant amount of metals there. So that means in any case, the model is not fitting observation and movement. So there must be something else going on before we talk about how to possibly test this. And the evolution of the medium metallicity and the mean metallicity here as a function of density, metallicity function of density for different light shifts, 2, 3, 4, this is the medium, this is the medium, and this is the mean with and without feedback. That evolution is quite mild, just as observed. So we can also test what kind of galaxies are responsible for enriching the IGM at different overdensity. As you can see that for these three curves from our three runs that has these galaxies above this mass, above this and so on, they converge at overdensity by 1,000. So that means most of metals are produced by large, massive galaxies in high-density regions. These like Lyman-Bray galaxies, presumably. But when you go to very low temperature, and those which end up in the voids are very clumpy, that they're mostly produced by low-mass galaxies, about 10 to 8 or so, and higher mass galaxies produce maybe a quarter, a third of the all the metals in voids.
The total mass of the stellar.
This is the total mass of the halo. Okay. So what's going on? Basically, all the galaxies that we can resolve in our simulation with mass above 10 to 8 solar mass or so apparently cannot transport the metals efficiently. So relatively uniformly enriched IGM to be consistent with observations. So I borrowed a study from Norman O'Shea and Pascos, a recent paper. What they did is they simulate the mini halos and eject metals according to their star formation prescription and stop the star formation at light shift 15. And then evolve the simulation until light shift 3 or so. And check what's the metallicity. They found that the metallicity in this range of interest about 10 minus 4 and a half, which is too low compared to observed value around here. So it's unclear at the moment what might solve this discrepancy between observations and simulations. So I want to go back to think about it and what the possible solutions might be. So there are top three stars from in galaxy with mass about 10 to 8 solar mass are not able to uniformly enrich the IGM, seeing at redshift 2 and 4, with or without superwings. There's a hint, without wings, you might actually overproduce the metals in moderate overdense regions. The possible solutions, this may not be a complete list, is there might be efficient metal mixing processes that are not treated in our simulation with relatively poor resolution to whatever, respect to whatever process there might be. Possible some instability processes that might more efficiently mixing the metals, because as I've shown you, the mean metallicity actually is quite high. So if you were able to somehow disperse these metals uniformly in the IGM, again, they already reached the voids. They just be very clumpy. Or possibly the pop three stars may enrich the IGM to a much higher level than we thought. And it's unclear at the moment. Or the cosmological model may be revised significantly. I will bet that the second option is probably the most likely option for this case. I will stop there. The questions.
I'm not sure I understand your first bullet. I just want to clarify. I wasn't aware, but perhaps I should be, that gas below the mean density of the IGM is uniformly enriched. How do we know that?
Maybe I thought you know that. This is observations from Shea et al. It's a very nice piece of work. And it's also consistent with another paper by Aerosol.
It's fine data. Maybe it's like, okay, we ask now it's more important. But that's a parallel fit, the large data set that goes from minus 0.5 and far over that to 100. However, the low-to-mean density error bar is so big, you don't need to do anything. In the paper, we have separate plots for the lowest density data. You can say very little.
Yeah, what I did, I took your formula, your fitting formula, and then I enlarged error bars by factor 3 just to take into account possible systematic effects. And now this region, that maybe the error bar is even bigger, you see.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm a little puzzled as to the right way to actually compare this to the observations. I would have thought the figure which actually shows the metallicity as a function of the KG1
yeah.
is actually the thing that the observations are really measuring. I mean, the observations don't know whether a tau 1 and alpha 1 is really a particular overdensity, right? You have to actually model that to find the overdensity.
You're absolutely right, Len.
So if it turns out that, in fact, that those particular objects, you know, are actually, you know, metal enriched because they're warm, right, that's fine, right? It just says you're not really measuring at that particular overdensity. So actually, your previous figure, I think, is actually the right one to compare with the observations. You're not wrong about that. Right?
Yeah.
You're right about that.
Yeah. Right. I haven't finished my paper, so I'll write whatever you want. Okay,
let me go on and maybe make another statement.
Yeah.
You may actually be making a prediction here that, in fact, if you look at the lower density bottles that actually contain metals, right, in this sort of model, you'll be predicting that they're actually preferentially wider than the bottles, I think, because the bottom.
Right? Yeah, right.
And therefore, you can actually go in and look. Sensitivity, that effect is actually there, and whether the low density system that you see in the thermal regression are actually hot systems rather than
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I could be just disoriented after I found this error, because the paper is almost published. So, but anyway, I took the advantage of the work that Jupp has done, which is using the simulation to calibrate the column density with three-dimensional density. So that's why I also plot it here. Okay.
Right.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So the best would probably present both.
And I think he assumed a very tight correlation between column density and density, and you have a completely different one. And you have now low optical depths, high density, and that's what he didn't assume.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think for that reason, it's not a fair comparison. So you have a small fraction of low optical depths, high density regions that are metal enriched, and that's what you just didn't assume. So you really can't compare that.
Right.
In the right panel here, if I read it correctly, you have half of the elements of the universe with an overdensity of, say, 10 are enriched with metals to 10 to the minus 3. So if you have no winds, how did the metals get there? I mean, they form presumably in stars, which in regions where the overdensities are 10 to the 4 or 10 to the 5. So how did the metals get to these regions where the densities are so low?
Well, I think these are presumably from galaxies of intermediate mass between 10 to 8 to 10 to 11. They formed possibly a long time ago. They end up there.
No, but so there are still winds in the model, even the one that you say. But you say without galactic winds, how did the metals get out of the galaxy?
The two models, basically what we do is, the wind without wings, we put metals in 27 cells around the stellar particle, but without putting energy into it. Yeah, which is not 100 kilopascals, it's a 50 kilopascals, yeah. So, yeah, and then with wings we put not only metals but also associated thermal energy to it.
And then as you propagate the hydrodynamics, then there's numerical diffusion across cell boundaries also, presumably.
Yeah, but it's all comparative, so diffusion, you know, both simulations suffer the same diffusion.
No, I understand, but yeah. I think in reality, if there are no winds, the metals will not get out of the galaxies, so there will be no metals in these densities.
Yeah. Oh, you.
Depends. There was a disagreement between your simulations and Fokker's on this particular issue. It depends. It depends on the numerical scheme, apparently.
Thank you. Actually, for kind of a follow-up to that question, plus even another small one. So, could it be that the merging or the stripping is doing some is helping towards spreading the metals even in the no wind simulation?
Oh yeah, but Sam is right. You still have to put the metals somewhere before you can, you know, stripping or disperse anyway. So we put about a sphere of about 50 kpc radius or so. Then these are subject to various processes involved.
Okay, so and this is my question. Thing that we everybody that has worked so far in this wind business has found that basically the same result, that the forest, the winds do not disturb the forest because the filling factor is smaller and so on.
Yeah,
but I think that the real challenge for the future would be just to being able to at the same time reproduce both the metal distribution and the galaxy that we observe. Because, you know, you can produce winds, and maybe you can find something that more or less looks like the forest, then the galaxies and star formation and their, you know, morphology and properties come out completely incorrect. So I think that the two things should be solved at the same time.
Oh, I totally agree with your spirit. I mean, basically, we have no free parameter in our simulation. It's totally falsifiable. You know, we have lots of predictive power. You can, you know, if it's wrong, it's wrong. We don't add additional parameters.
I just wanted to comment about this way of how anyone includes these winds in their cosmological type simulations, and that's under the assumption basically that you have this one phase medium inside the bubble that's being blown out. And I think that's for the same reasons why you can't explicitly include the feedback to generate the winds inside the galaxy, because it won't get out of the galaxy. Those same kind of multi-phase processes are almost surely to occur within the wind itself. And I can imagine situations where this bubble blows and the walls disintegrate and the hot metals leak out to much larger distances than a lot of the mass or the gas. And I can imagine much different scenarios. So sort of going to your point number one in your possible solution seems to me very likely, and that this is a very restricted class of things that you're studying just because of the only class that you have the capability of studying. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you can play with different sort of schemes how to deposit your energy and your metals around your stellar particles. It could be anisotropic, or could be isotropic, or could be proportional to density.
But Rain, you're smoothing over 50. Volume. You're assuming it's smooth over scales of 50 kiloparsecs, whereas you can imagine it's going to break up on parsec-sized scales or some kind of thing. I mean, you're like so many orders of magnitude away from the multi-phase possible structure that it's sort of hopeless, isn't it?
I point out we're starting from a hopeless point, but we put a parameter in just to understand what might be done. Just to understand. I mean, we're far from any truth, basically. I have to admit that. Yeah.